Welcome to Press This, the WordPress community podcast featuring exclusive content and interviews with leaders in the WordPress community, covering everything from development to integrating your digital marketing strategy with WordPress. Join host David Vogelpohl of WP Engine and special guests from across the community as they keep you up to speed on the latest advancements in WordPress. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. This is your host, David Vogelpohl. I support the WordPress community through my role at WP Engine, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here every week on Press This. As a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at WPDavidV, and you can subscribe to Press This on iTunes, iHeartRadio, or Spotify, not Shopify. And of course, you can download the latest episodes at wmr.fm. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the future of e-commerce and WooCommerce. And joining us for that conversation from Elementary Digital, I'd like to welcome Giles Seward. Giles, welcome to Press This.
Hi, David. Thanks for inviting me on.
Good. So glad to have you here. I know you're calling in from England today, right? Is that correct?
I am indeed, yes, across the pond for you guys, but I am calling from a place called Yorkshire, so in the north of England,
yeah. Oh, fantastic. Well, really excited to have you here. We know, of course, e-commerce is a global sport, and I know this is a big part of your focus, but for those listening, what we're going to be talking to Giles about today is his thoughts on where WooCommerce wins over closed source platforms like Shopify. The cost of ownership of open versus closed source platforms. So what does it cost to actually like own and operate one of these stores in these two different ways? And why WooCommerce is unintuitively becoming the enterprise e-com platform of choice. I'm really curious to hear more about that, Giles. But we'll go ahead and kick it off with the first question I actually ask every guest. So I'm very curious to hear your answer, Giles. Briefly tell me your WordPress origin story. When did you first use WordPress?
I started a little bit before that. I started working digital in 2006, and back then the whole sort of approach to building websites was around bespoke content management systems, and I worked from about 2006 to about 2011 developing websites for people using bespoke CMS, and then WordPress started to appear. And it went from someone ringing me up and saying, I want to build a website, to someone saying, do you do WordPress? And when I'd been asked about 10 times, I thought, oh, I better have a look at this. So back in 2011, I started to find out a bit more about it. And obviously back then it was more sort of setting its blogging roots. So I started to learn. I bought a few books and started to really get into understanding more about it. And then I'm not a developer by any means, but I started to pull together some WordPress websites and learn how to connect a theme and how to host a WordPress website. And one of the reasons I started doing it is because my pals, I play rugby, which is a very popular sport in England. And they were asking me if I could build them a website. So I started to do it. And it dawned on me today when I was preparing for this, I thought, I remember doing the first one. It was so I could buy an iPad 2, an Apple iPad 2. And so I built my first WordPress website way back when, about 10 years ago. And what I realized very quickly is about 2 years on from then, I realized that I was working for this agency that built a bespoke content management system. And I realized actually the future was very much WordPress. And I decided to leave the job that I was in and then set up my own dedicated WordPress agency back in 2013.
That's cool. You know, 2010, 2011 was a very popular time for adopting WordPress as a CMS. This was right after custom post types with custom meta fields had appeared in WordPress. And so this was also around the time I was also in the agency business, and my phone kept ringing for WordPress sites. And I was like, oh, I guess I better start building with WordPress. So I kind of share that origin story with you, at least in that way. I actually used WordPress a little bit before then for other reasons, but it's kind of funny that overlap there, Giles.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, from my point of view, it was driven by the marketplace and what people were saying. And when I started to explore, because obviously I was working in this bespoke CMS and using it every day, and I just realized even back then how forward WordPress was as a content management system. It was just so much easier to use, and for people to pick up and work with it was just much better.
Yeah, you didn't have to maintain that bespoke CMS either. That was a pretty nice part.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It was, it was like a breath of fresh air, to be fair.
Sure, sure, sure. All right, cool. So tell me a little bit real quickly about Elementary Digital, what y'all work on related to WooCommerce.
Yeah, so I founded Elementary Digital back in 2013. I ran it by myself for about 8 months, and then I met my business partner, a guy called Andy Holland, who started in WordPress right at day dot when WordPress was on the scene back in, I think, about 2008 or something like that. And once he came on board, we decided to build a dedicated WordPress agency in the UK. Today, we're 35 people. We have 18 developers. We have offices in London and a place called Leeds, which is up in the north of England. I have quite a heavy e-commerce background. I've been working in e-commerce since 2006, so for 15 years. And that e-commerce has been not just working, building websites, but also SEO, paid search, social media. So the full mix, really. So how to generate traffic and how to get people to convert on the website. Started building in WooCommerce back in 2014. And we're quite well recognized for WooCommerce today in England, in particular. We specialize very much in complex WooCommerce builds today, and we build more enterprise level e-commerce platforms for people. So we work with high street brands in the UK. We work with a lot of business to business brands, financial services. We work with one of the top three banks in the UK, supporting them in WooCommerce. And then fitness, clothing and fast fashion. So we have quite a cross-section of experience, really. So we get challenged with doing lots of interesting things in WooCommerce. And what we're quite proud of is we want to push the boundaries, really. And we're very much interested in WooCommerce being more sort of considered as more of an enterprise e-commerce framework.
So I like how you commented about kind of pushing the boundaries. And I know, at least for me, it feels like people choose WordPress and WooCommerce when they're trying to build something unique and stand out. And I know that like closed source platforms, you know, in e-com, things like Shopify can sometimes make it easy. And we know, of course, that Woo has grown to a massive size. I think it launched in 2011, right after those custom post types. But, you know, Shopify, of course, is gaining ground. So I'm just curious, like, if Shopify for smaller stores is easier, why do people choose Woo over these kind of quote simpler and closed source platforms like Shopify?
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the things about Shopify is momentum. I think it is bigger actually than Woo. I did some research on Built With, and at the moment there's 4.8 million Shopify stores and there's 4.7 WooCommerce. So it's ever slightly bigger than WooCommerce these days. But yeah, I think the whole thing around Shopify and how it presents itself to market has been an easy option, and as easy as opening your laptop and using the piece of software on your laptop is what it breaks down some barriers, because in e-commerce, there is always that fear of the unknown. And Shopify, don't get me wrong, is very simple to use. It's very idiot proof. It's a great package. However, what we see is quite a bit of pushback in terms of Shopify, because whilst people run into it and sort of set up the stores, they do it with the wrong understanding of the overall lifetime costs. And what they're finding now is that to have a Shopify store, they're getting them online, they're getting up and running. However, ultimately, it's costing them a lot of money, and it's money that's coming out of the back pocket. So one of the shifts we've seen in terms of the marketplace is people are now talking to us about WooCommerce because there is more opportunity to own the website and evolve the website, because obviously Shopify is a closed framework and you're limited to what you can effectively do by that its features that are available. So yeah, it's with WooCommerce, what we've seen is people that have come to us for a WooCommerce website have already been aware of WooCommerce and what it can do, or have had an experience with WordPress, which with WordPress being the biggest content management system in the world is very beneficial. But then what we're also seeing is a lot of people that have been on these other systems like OpenCart, BigCommerce, or Shopify that are now looking for something that they can evolve and adapt with them, and they can have more ownership over their whole framework.
I was just going to say, you just hit the two points that really stood out for me as I was listening to your earlier comments on that, was this notion of evolve and own. In other words, when you choose closed source, it's almost like you're renting your website or your store from that company, but then you're also restrained in the way you might evolve based on, you know, the limitations of the platform. Now, of course, limitations can sometimes be good because they can help you move fast. But if you're trying to stand out, it feels like open platforms, you know, give you that ability. It seems like that seems to play out with the way you were responding to that. I'm curious though about this kind of extra cost part, and I want to dig into that, but we're going to take our first break and we'll be right back.
Time to plug into a commercial break. Stay tuned for more Press This in just a moment.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. This is your host, David Vogelpohl. I'm in the middle of our interview with Giles Seward talking about the future of e-commerce and WooCommerce. Giles, right before the break, you were talking a little bit about, for the clients you're working with, really some of the key things that are important to them is the ability to evolve and stand out. Those, I guess, are my words, the standout part, but also to kind of own their store versus, say, renting it from a closed source platform. But prior to that, you talked about the costs. And so I know that, you know, the Shopify model kind of relies on a percentage of sales for each transaction. And I also know that kind of you can do custom stuff in Shopify, but I feel like the tech stack is not known by a large volume of developers. So help me understand, like, where is this cost coming from? Is it coming from like the complexity and customization and like a smaller set of developers that know it? Is it coming from the percentage of sales? Like, where's the pushback coming from?
Well, you've got a few problems within the cost. I mean, there is a subscription fee when you go, and when you go to Shopify Plus, the more advanced model, then your fees are much higher. And obviously you've mentioned about there's the fees that you have to pay based on the transactions that go through the site, which, you know, the more successful you are, the more penalized you're effectively going to be, because you're going to have to be paying out to your website provider. Fundamentally, where the costs add up is, you pay a subscription fee, so £29 per month for the smallest, the most basic version of Shopify, which in the face of things, you think, oh, it's very cheap, $29 is nothing. But then when you grow or you evolve as an e-commerce business, and the reason you're going online is to do that, and if you're successful and people find you, then, and you want more out of the website, trying to find someone that can cost effectively work with you is very difficult. The reason being is the development for community for Shopify is still when compared to WordPress, massively limited. Shopify is built in its own coding methodology called Liquid, which is like a version of Ruby, Ruby on Rails. And the number of developers that are trained or are capable to a high enough level to be able to do a professional and considered job is limited. And the knock-on effect for that is that the agencies out there can charge a premium. So it's a kind of a double bluff. You sign up for your e-commerce website and you pay your $29 and you think, oh, I've created it myself and stuff. But then when you want to evolve it or change it and do basic things on it, first of all, the extensions might not exist within Shopify. So then you're limited to what the functionality is that's for that piece of software. It's effectively software as a service. But then when you go out to find an agency or a developer, there's very few freelance developers. They're usually booked up for months in advance. Because they're so busy, they start to charge a premium. But then if you go to an agency, again, they're charging a premium. So that whole sort of cost-effective model that you thought, oh, I'll get on online, starts to disappear, because that whole cost of management, it just doesn't exist. Then on the flip side of that is, if you are successful, again, you're paying out for using the system, and the more successful you are, the more you're paying, which as a business, there is sort of a turning point where you think, oh, it's all right, I'm making money. But soon the point when you need more investment or you want to adapt the system. So for example, if you wanted to add in a warehouse management system to Shopify, it may not have a connector existing, but then if you want to bring in a third party agency to develop it, the cost of doing it would be really high. But then if you do that and then it's successful, you're going to get charged for more transactions going through the site because it's more successful, the site. So it's a lot of articles that are coming out at the moment are comparing Shopify to other systems like Magento, WooCommerce and all this. And one of the big things is there is the lifetime cost of having a Shopify website. And it's quite eye-opening, really. I did a little bit of insight, and to have a more advanced version of Shopify, so Shopify Plus, the first year cost on average is $133,000 to $270,000. And then your third year, if you're a successful Shopify online business, is $270,000 to $413,000, which comparative, when you compare that to WooCommerce, take into account once you've had the build done, you have to pay maintenance fee and you have to pay hosting fee, no doubt. But it's not even, it's probably about 10% of that cost. So it's not just a small cost, it's a phenomenal cost, it's massive cost. So Shopify, for all its benefits of getting you online and being a relatively simple platform to use, in the long run, it's a very, very expensive platform and way to run an e-commerce business.
So did those costs you just ran down, did that include the cost of the development time to maintain the store? Or was that just the platform cost?
Yeah, that's your overall cost. So that's cost to maintain and run the site. And that'll probably be your, it was just based on an average e-commerce example. Yeah. If you're hitting 430,000, if you're turning over, let's say a couple of $1 million, that's quite a big cost. It's a big cost.
Yeah,
and if you look at percentages, on average, you'd say about 10% of whatever you turn over, your sales should be covering your cost of developing and maintaining a website and perhaps some digital marketing as well. That's way over. You're looking at if you turn over $4 million.
You hit this point early on in that response, and I just kind of want to get back to it, is like, if you want to do custom development in Shopify, your developers need to know a special version of Ruby on Rails. And the number of web developers in the world who build websites with Ruby on Rails, because again, you can build applications with Ruby on Rails, but actual websites and e-commerce sites, I imagine being a smaller cohort, it's a smaller volume of developers, which means less agencies, less freelancers. And if you have an internal team, it also means less developers to hire who will be familiar with your stack and ready to hit the ground running. I mean, granted, you could hire, I guess, generally Rails developers and train them up, but that's going to delay your onboarding process. I mean, that's a huge deal. Like the number one problem in tech, if you will, is hiring. I feel like this is a huge point.
Yeah, I mean, talent pool in general across most of the website frameworks is a real challenge. And what you're not only doing in Shopify is you're asking a developer who's perhaps been trained in PHP or JavaScript or whatever to then come in and learn something completely new. And yes, don't get me wrong, if they have familiarity with code and they're good at what they do and they're bright, then yeah, they'll be able to migrate across and learn it. But you're still asking them to learn again.
Or you have a Rails application developer who you're asking to learn how to build websites, which I have a distinction between those two myself. And I feel like the developers and engineers do too.
Yeah, I mean, and typically, I don't know what it's like in the US, but in the UK, trying to recruit a Ruby on Rails developer or engineer, if you want to call that one, they're not cheap. They're not cheap, and they're often wrapped up in, there are a lot of organizations, in particular in the UK, that use Ruby for various applications. And to take them away from what they're doing, you're going to have to offer them a big salary. So with that big salary, then comes, they've got to pass that cost on to the clients that they're working with. So the whole cycle is quite challenging. And we see a lot of people, we speak to a lot of people that have got a Shopify site and become disillusioned with, not so much Shopify itself, because don't get me wrong, it's a good system, but more with the whole ecosystem that sits around it, and post-launch support, and the ambitions that are not being fulfilled by the agency or the partner that they're working with.
Yeah, it's someone who's hired many web and application developers over the years. I know how compelling it is to get that right with your technology choices. I remember my own WordPress origin story. It was the customers calling in, but it was also the developers I could hire, and having more of them to choose from, I know, was a big motivator for me. Is that how you also think about it?
Yeah, I mean, in WordPress, we never have any challenges recruiting in WordPress. There are expertise, you know, you have different tiers of WordPress developers. You have junior, middle, and senior, and it's their capabilities in actually being able to make WordPress do what you want them to do at enterprise level. But we're fortunate that we have a lot of really good senior developers. But but there is, in the UK in particular, I'd say there's probably 10 WordPress developers for every one Shopify developer. So that gives some context. So when you go out to market to try and recruit, we are getting a really good number of CVs. That then means we can pass on the amount of resource to our clients, but also provide more cost-effective solutions to allow more enterprise-level businesses to be able to build in WooCommerce and support in WooCommerce.
Yeah, and build more stuff, right? That's what happens when you save money on your development costs, is you can have more developers doing more things, making you more money. And that's the wonderful part, I think, of that, in addition to just the joy of not having to look for weeks or months to find your next developer. I really want to dig into the enterprise side, but we're going to take our last break and we'll be right back.
Time to plug into a commercial break. Stay tuned for more Press This in just a moment.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Press This, the WordPress community podcast on WMR. This is your host, David Vogelpohl. We're in the middle of our episode around the future of e-commerce and WooCommerce. Giles, before the break, you were talking a little bit around kind of the hiring dilemma with, closed source platforms like Shopify, particularly that use, languages for their customization that might not be as popular as what WordPress benefits from. But I want to kind of shift gears now into the enterprise world a little bit. Woo is traditionally, of course, thought of as an SMB tool. And, you know, you kind of said you found some success building for enterprises. And I certainly know a ton of them that leverage Woo. But I'm just curious, like, what your general thoughts are on how it is specifically helpful for enterprises.
One of the big points we just touched on is the fact that there's a more resource out there and there's a better community out there. You know, by virtue of the fact that WooCommerce is an extension of WordPress, you've got the momentum of the WordPress movement globally. So I was at a conference the other week and I think it was about 40% of the web is on WordPress at the moment. So from an enterprise point of view, you have that wealth of knowledge, that community, i.e. plugins, themes, but then also that available resource, because most enterprise businesses, it's all about cost is a big fact, but then it's also about speed to market and the ability to be able to support and evolve at the pace of retail, because, you know, the ideas and search in particular SEO changes every day. So having a readily available team, whether that's internally or externally, that can adapt and evolve a website framework is really important for these businesses. And the challenges around Shopify and other e-commerce frameworks out there is that resource is finite. People are fighting over that, the skill set and the talent pool. And it holds back businesses. It holds back these enterprise businesses, and those guys can't wait. The things need to be done. They need to be delivered on a day-to-day basis. So that's a big, big factor. Then WooCommerce itself is evolved. I mean, you touched on it. It was launched back in 2011, but since then, it's massively evolved, and it's a very powerful tool these days. It's very lightweight. So because of the way it is, i.e. a framework that works with plugins, you can infinitely adapt it to your requirements. So with the plugins, you can add in new functionality. With the way that WordPress has been developed, you can adapt it along to the enterprise client's requirements. So we've done work around subscriptions. We've done work around integrations with recognized ERP systems like SAP, Sage in the UK, and all using the REST API within WordPress. Because also it's theme based, we can do a huge amount of adaptations to make change conversion journeys, change product pages, and it's like the Swiss Army knife for e-commerce frameworks. Systems like Shopify, you're very limited to what functionality is available, what's on part of their roadmap, And when will that be released? And as I touched on, enterprise businesses don't wait for things. You have to do things at the speed of retail. In terms of there's multiple uses for it. So depending on your product type, depending on your marketplace requirements, you can effectively adapt WooCommerce to your requirements. There's a huge amount of SEO features within the framework. So WordPress is very favorable to the digital marketing community. But then using WooCommerce, you have all the powers of SEO within WordPress, but in an e-commerce framework. In terms of ownership as well, enterprise businesses more and more these days are wanting to have full ownership. When you have proprietary or software as a service, a bit like Shopify, they're limited, and enterprise businesses like to feel like they own the IP and they can ultimately do with it what they want. The common myth around it that we often have conversations with is around the security. That myth these days is getting more and more dispelled because WordPress is as secure as any other framework. And more, we're getting contacted more from IT directors or CIOs, chief information officers, about WooCommerce, because the perception of it these days is that it's up there with these larger e-commerce frameworks, sure, like Demandware.
It's patched, right, for any known vulnerabilities, and so on, where it's WordPress. But it sounds like thematically, as I kind of hear you run through that list, the thing that really stood out to me was speed, right? Like what enterprise wants more than anything is to move fast. And that seems to be the toehold for me that I've seen that gets you in the door initially with WordPress's, enterprises using WordPress. But then you kind of pointed out that you kind of have infinite control in a way. And so I like to always frame this as like basically with WordPress and WooCommerce, you set the pace and direction of innovation in your business. You're not kind of, you pointed this out, you're not waiting around for the next thing on the roadmap. So hopefully you get that thing you need to grow your business. I think that's a really wonderful point to end on. Giles, this was wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. It was really nice to meet you, David, and really good to have a chat.
Yeah, it was very interesting. If you'd like to learn more about what Giles is up to, you can visit elementarydigital.co.uk. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Press This, the WordPress Community Podcast on WMR. Again, this has been your host, David Vogelpohl. I support the WordPress community through my role at WP Engine, and I love to bring the best of the community to you here every week on Press This.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.